you're listening to CJLO News. Multicaf, the food security group in Côte d'Neige, is raising funds to support their social workers through art. Four artists have been collaborating over the last month in a studio in Snowdon to paint a mural 24 feet long and 8 feet high, full of color and patterns and portraits, which will be broken down and auctioned off to help support Multicaf. The artists are Carmelo Blandino, Melissa Del Pinto, Kevin Lido, and Kristen McRae. Here is McRae, a Berlin-based artist known for large installations and pattern art.
I mean, as an artist, it's the greatest gift to be invited to make something for such a good cause. Like, it's so rare that we get to do something that we know that the funds will totally go towards people who really, really need our help.
The artists all came in for this initiative from different places, but are all Montrealers originally, with connections to Côte d'Neige and Multicaf. Here is Kevin Lido, most famous for Montreal's massive, iconic Leonard Cohen portrait.
We love painting, and if we can help people with what we love doing, we all win. Yeah, put our heart and souls into it, and we're really hoping to inspire people to put their money forth and help our community. So everybody's working together to uplift our community, so together we all are a better society. Well,
the mural is being broken down into 12 pieces and auctioned off online this month. The money is going towards supporting Multicaf's ambitious social work programs. Here is Multicaf's president, Jean-Sébastien Patrice.
Before the pandemic in 2020, we were helping 1,200 people. That was our number at that time, active members. Now it's 16,000 people. So there's a big emergency, too much people. And the thing is, we understood that we cannot only give food to people to help them. We have to find solution to take them outside of the poverty and bring them back for an employment, learning French, learning English, even going back to school. So we have to help them doing so. And we put down 2 years ago, with the help of those project, we were able to hire social services. And people used to ask me, what are you talking about, social services with food insecurity? Before we put that department of social services, people used to come to our service and use our service for an average of 18 months. With the help of those social worker, we're not at 6 months. So that's where the fund go, because we don't have government funding to hire those social services, because the government think, well, people are hungry, you give them food. We think people are hungry, yes, you give them food, but by the same time, you help find those other solution.
For CJLO News and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. What a weekend we had. What a weekend. We talked about it last week. We were going to have the push for the NBA playoffs, push for the NHL playoffs. We'll get into that. We had big tournaments in tennis. But this week was all about the Masters and the 89th playing of the Masters. And boy, did it ever live up to the hype. We all talked about it for the last 11 years. Will Rory McIlroy get the job done at Augusta National? He did. He absolutely did, and we are honored to be joined by Joey Geraci, Concordia golf coach and a fantastic player himself. Joey, can you hear us, and how are you doing?
Yeah, I can hear you great. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So, we've been friends a long time, and we've bonded over Rory McIlroy's play for the longest time. But every time we discussed his great play, we always mention, will he ever get it done at Augusta National? Now that he's done it, and trust me, it took every ounce of him to do so. What are your thoughts on his play? Was that not the craziest round of golf? It looked like he was choking and then he got it back. What were your thoughts on Rory's tournament and specifically that round yesterday?
Yeah, it was insane. It was the craziest tournament I've ever watched, I think. I can't remember a tournament with so many ups and downs, two-shot swings, three-shot swings. I really can't think of anything. And then throughout the week, from Thursday, you can see he was hitting the ball tremendously. And then the stats backed it up when you look at the strokes gained and everything. He was so much better than everyone in the field from, you know, off the tee to strokes gained approach, which if you know Augusta, if your strokes gained approach is good, typically you'll be inside the top five. So he was looking good. And it was just a question of if he can close it out. And after that bogey on 14, I really wasn't sure if he could, but that shot on 15 is going to go down as probably it's got to be top two in his career.
Oh, for sure. That shot was remarkable. If you people didn't watch, he went into the final round with a two-shot lead. He could have been, Joey, if you think about the entire week, he could have had like a seven, maybe an eight-shot lead. He had the two double bogeys on Thursday, which he said was, funny enough, good for him, kind of settled him down, came out, shot a bogey 366 on Friday. Then he had the crazy start with six straight threes on Saturday, shoots another 66. He has a two-shot lead. Then he double bogeys again the first hole, almost having the perfect drive hitting the bunker. And then he really settled in nicely, Joe. He had the great birdie on three, had an amazing iron in the four. When did you start thinking, okay, this could happen?
After a shot on 12, I think you're looking, and then place 13, very smart. You're liking what he's doing, and then I still don't know what that'll happen on 13 there. But, after I was concerned about a little bit on his tee shot on 10, just because of what happened in 2011, obviously. Once he hit that, and then once he, hit a great shot and a really good par on 12, I thought he locked it up. Just the way he was swinging, he had that classic Rory jump in his step, so it looked good, but obviously more drama came after that.
So yeah, like you mentioned, he had the rocky start, had the great middle part of the round. We all know the demons on 10. And when he dropped the iron, I was scared for a second. But then the track man of the shot was going right at the hole, and it was. Makes birdie there. Gets a crazy good break on 11 with the hitting the lips, or the mound, sorry, and it bounces to the left, stays up. He gets through 12, which has killed so many Masters players going for the green jacket who has a lead. That hole, he got through that one. And like you mentioned, Joey, he played 13 brilliantly with his first, hit a perfect three-wood out there, great layup. Can you even describe what the hell that wedge was on 13? He had a plenty of green to work with, perfect lie, even a five there would have been a good score for him.
Yeah, in his post-round interview, he said it was due to the upslope, but I just think it's hard to close out the Masters. I wouldn't know, but I would assume it's very, very tough to close out the Masters, and probably a very nervy swing. Didn't fully commit to it, and then from there, missed his landing spot and rolled into Race Creek. But how he handled himself after 14 was really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. That, like you mentioned, that shot in the 15 with his 7-iron, that's one of the two greatest shots of his career. Hit a nice shot in the 16, but it was a fast cup coming down the hill. And then that shot on 17, Joey, that was, I don't think he thought it was going to make it over the bunker. I don't think. He was yelling it for it to go. And 17, we saw Justin Rose bogey it like half an hour earlier. We saw Ludvig bogey it half an hour earlier. It was playing tough that day. And Rory hit just one of the great shots of his career. And then I honestly thought, okay, good drive here, and he gets it done. What? And then he hits it into the bunker on 18 with a wedge. I know you went into a playoff, but like, do you think this puts to bed the doubts we've had about Rory? He definitely gave up the tournament a few times, but he showed tremendous grit to bring it back and complete the slam.
Yeah, there was no quit in him. I think he kind of maybe lost his swing a little bit down the stretch, but the fact that he was able to pull it off and just find a way was quite impressive. And I think, you know, he just won the Masters, which is cool, but you take a look at the venues coming up now. We got Quail Hollow for the PGA, and if you know anything about Rory and golf, you know, I don't think there's anyone on tour who plays a course better than Rory at Quail. Maybe with the exception of Tiger and a bunch, but so that's exciting. And then we got a Portrush and Oakmont. I don't think there's any explanation with Portrush, so this is going to be a really, really fun year if you're a Rory fan.
Absolutely, absolutely. Can we just get your quick thoughts on Rory maybe coming back to the Masters now? We've all said if there's a golf course at a major venue that suits Rory, of course Quail Hollow is going to be, that's just an extra bonus. He's won there four times. But if you look at Augusta National, the way it's mapped out, if you hit the ball a long way and straight and hit a little bit of a draw, you are chilling at Augusta National. Now that he finally has conquered the Masters, could you see Rory winning several green jackets in his career now that he's got the first one?
I think from a mental standpoint, yes. If his irons can stay even close to what they were this week, yeah. Because the thing with Augusta is you got to land the ball on certain tiers, right? And if you don't, as you watched any golf this weekend, it's going to roll and you're most likely going to three putt. So if he can continue to hit his irons even half of what he did this week, he'll be in contention for many years to come.
Absolutely. And lastly, you mentioned Quail Hollow coming up, Oakmont, which U.S. Opens, let's be honest, he could have two more of those things. Had a chance at LACC. We all know the story of Pinehurst last year. He could have a very special year, Joey. He's already won the Players, won at Pebble Beach, has won the Masters, has completed the Slam, the 11-year major drought's over. If I were to put an over-under of Rory Majors this year, 2.5, including the Masters, do you think he can win another major or possibly two this year? Just considering he's playing the best golf out of anyone in the world. He's finally got the Grand Slam. He's finally won a major. And with these venues coming up, could you see Rory winning at least one, maybe two more majors this year?
I think if his game stays like this, I think the venues line up perfectly for him. So it's really, like I said, it's super exciting to see what's going to happen in the next 4 or 5 months. Then it's a Ryder Cup year. It's golf's going to be fun this year to watch.
Absolutely. Sorry, I have one more thing before you go, because I know people wanted me to ask about it, because they're all into the YouTube golf scene. They love Bryson. What happened with Bryson DeChambeau on Sunday? I thought he did a miraculous job Thursday through Saturday without his A stuff, just short gaming his way into the final group. The wheels kind of fell off on Sunday, but was that just a gutsy, gutsy effort by Bryson to even have a chance with his, not even B game, his C, D game?
It's impressive to see what he can do. I mean, I was even surprised he was able to get it relatively close to the lead, just the way he was hitting some of those iron shots. He knows it, that his game wasn't there. And the fact that he was almost, you know, able to kind of pull it off is impressive, and it's kind of scary to think if his game was there, what he can do. So he's going to be there for a lot more majors, and it's going to be fun, and maybe this will be a rivalry coming for many years.
perfect. Thank you, Joey. And I can't believe I'm saying this. Rory McIlroy is a Masters champion. Thank you for joining us, and we appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
There we go. That's Joe. Thank you, Joey. That's Joey Geraci. He's one of the Concordia golf coaches and a fantastic player himself. Yeah, he's right. He talked about it. We mentioned on this show last week, and we had Cameron on last week. Thanks to Cameron and Joey for coming on the show. This was a perfect situation for Rory McIlroy heading into a major if it wasn't the Masters. Cameron mentioned it last week. He's swinging great. He's won the two biggest events before Augusta. One at Pebble, the elevated event, with an elite field. Scotty was there. Shane Lowry was there. All the big boys were there on the PGA Tour. Won that one going away. Then he wins the fifth major, the Players, in a playoff against JJ Spahn. And then he had a great performance in Houston. It was all lining up for him to have a very, very successful major season. But the problem is that major is the Masters that was coming up. And we know about 2011. He was a young kid there, and he responded brilliantly at, the U.S. Open a few months later, a congressional one there. But still the demons of Augusta National. And he had a chance in 2018. He was in the last group with Patrick Reed. I think in 2016, he was in the final group with Jordan Spieth on Saturday, and he didn't even make a birdie. I think he shot 77, 76, shot himself out of contention. Then we all know the hype that was around him in 2023 when he switched to Scotty Cameron putter. He misses the cut. Then in 2022, he made the miraculous run at Scotty, and he fell short because Scotty just played safe golf the whole day. He shot 64. But he said that did wonders for him mentally at Augusta. And then here we are. We are Monday, April the 14th, and Rory McIlroy not only completed the career Grand Slam, which is one unbelievable thing, but he won the Masters. And Jack Nicklaus phoned into live from the Masters, the Golf Central's NBC Golf Network show following, and he said, "You guys are all hell-bent on the career Grand Slam. Rory just wanted to win the Masters." Like, okay, he's won the PGA. He's won the PGA twice. He's won the U.S. Open. He's won the Open Championship. Those are all amazing tournaments, and they're major championships. And you can say the Open Championship's level with the Masters. Okay, fine. But in North America, the one tournament that we think is above them all is the Masters. It is. The green jacket, going to Augusta every year. There's the Champions Dinner. You're invited for life. You see Freddie Couples is playing. He's 65 years old. Bernard Langer still in the field. It's the smallest field in golf. It's the prettiest golf course maybe in the world. The history, everyone knows every hole. It's the perfect time of year. We're done with winter up here. We just want spring. The weather's turning nice, and we have the Masters to watch. Something about the Masters in North America. And that's the one he didn't have. And you said, when you heard what he said after, on the wherever, it's the practice green, wherever they hold the green jacket ceremony outside, he said, "I know this is not popular from where I come from, but this is the best golf tournament in the world, and it's not close." And he did it. And we can go through every shot. We can go through the mental hurdles. On Thursday, let's be honest, the first 14 holes he played were brilliant. He was 4 under. Standing on the 15th fairway, hits a great iron into the green, but it's firm, that green on 15. It's a new green. It's firm. Ran past. He chips it into the water. Makes double. Okay, that could kill some people, but you're still 2 under par, 5 off the lead on Thursday. You got time. He follows that up with a 6 on 17. Another double bogey. Finishes even par, a brilliant round of golf that just vanished. 14 amazing holes gone in a second. And to his credit, he said he's worked on his mental game. He's learned to shake off bad rounds now. He's a much grittier player than he was when he was younger. And what did he do? He went out and he was patient on the front nine, was only 1 under on Friday on the front. And he went out and torched the back nine, shot 31 coming in, shoots a 66, and he was back in the golf tournament. And in the past, we've seen Rory, when he's down and out, go at pins and make birdies at Augusta. Now he was firmly in the hunt going into the weekend. What does he do? He starts Saturday, birdie on one, eagle on two, birdie on three, pars the tough par three, fourth, then birdies five, par six. At one point, he was five under through five. And then with the par on six, he's the first player ever to start the round at Augusta National, I think, with six straight threes. He was on fire. And what happened in the middle of that round? He had some adversity. Bogeyed eight. I mean, he was shaky. Well, he missed the drive on seven. It was getting iffy there for a second. What did he do? He responded. He responded. He's closed out great. Hit that unbelievable iron in the 15. Makes eagle. He was superb. But still, even him with a two-shot lead. And everyone pulling for him. His nemesis was in his final group. Let's be honest. When Bryson DeChambeau made that long putt on Saturday to get into the final group, all the storylines on Golf's Channel, on ESPN, everywhere. Oh boy, he's in with Bryson. I don't know if he's mentally strong enough to do it. And you know what? The first hole, it got to him. He lost this Masters a few times. He hits it into the bunker on one, off the tee, makes double. Easy hole on two. He scrambles for a par. Then what did he do? He settled in nicely. Birdied three, birdied four, a miraculous par on five, parred six, maybe the shot of his career if he made the putt on seven from the trees, miraculous par there. Gets through the stretch, birdies nine. Then the hole that killed him in 2011, 10, birdies 10. Then what happens? He gets through Amen Corner, bogeying 11's not the end of the world. He hits the ball in the water on a chip. One of the easier chips at Augusta National on 13. Makes double while Rose birdies 16, and he's tied. Then he bogeys 14. It was unraveling. It was Greg Norman 2.0. And trust me, the Rory of even 2 years ago, let alone 11 years ago, does not win that golf tournament. But to his credit, he put in a lot of work mentally, and he's been through so much, it really helped him become a better golfer. And that shot he hit into 15, roping a 7-iron around a tree on a par 5 to 5 feet. Then on 17, if he hits it into the bunker, Justin Rose wins the tournament. He thinks it's in the bunker. Go, go, go. It bounces forward, rolls to 3 feet. He makes the birdie putt. And then once you think he's gotten in the bag, he hits a great drive on 18. Now he has 128 yards, 130 yards with a wedge. And we see it's the green slopes from back to front. It's in the front. If you just hit it on the ridge, it's going to come back to 10 feet. He hits it in the bunker. Can't get up and down. We're going to a playoff. Think about that. He had the tournament, lost three times, and won three times. Doubled the first hole, responds. Hits it into the creek on 13, bogeys 14. What does he do? Respond with birdies at 15 and 17. He's pretty much got the Masters in the bag on 18 in the fairway. Hits it into the bunker. Makes bogey, playoff. Lost it again. And Rose hits a great tee shot on 18, and he had a hell of a Saturday. He could have easily folded on Sunday the way he played on Saturday, but he didn't, and he's a great, great player. He hits it right in the fairway. Rory hits it, maybe the best drive of the week, in the exact same spot. And Rose hits a great shot to 12 feet or so, maybe a bit longer. I'm surprised he didn't get the roll down. And what does Rory do? He goes up and makes his best wedge swing of the week. Off the ridge, down the slope to 3 feet. And once Rose missed, I was so nervous. Because if Rory missed that one, I don't even think him. With all of the mental coaches he has and the amount of sports psychologists he has seen, I don't even think he could come back from that. And he made it. And he won the green jacket. He's a Masters champion. And now, He is a part of the most elite group in the sport. Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods. And now, because of yesterday, that group includes Rory McIlroy. And now Joe even mentioned, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves because he went 11 years without winning one. If I were to tell you in 2014, after he blew the way the field in 2011 at the U.S. Open, after he blew the field away at Kiowa and the PGA in 2012, after a phenomenal performance at Royal Liverpool, then he won the WGC event in between, and then he won the PGA again. If I were to tell you that 25-year-old who had four majors was not going to win one for a decade, you would have laughed at me. You would have said, you are crazy. He's the most talented player since Tiger. And to his credit, he's won everything else in between. He's won the FedEx Cup three times. He's been on countless Ryder Cup teams. He's won the Players twice, the fifth major, the Indian Wells of golf. He's won that twice. How many big tournaments? He's won the Canadian Open a few times. He's won, I think they said he's won 19 times in between his last major and now. It's just he couldn't get it done in the majors. And the close calls, like we've mentioned, the last group in 2018 with Patrick Reed, and that didn't go his way, shot over par. Obviously, the Open Championship at St. Andrews. LACC, the U.S. Open. Last year at Pinehurst, letting that one slip away. And trust me, he would trade all, if he won all those and lost this one, it would still eat at him. Even if he won those three majors, St. Andrews for the Open again, winning those two. So he would have three majors in that span. He'd be at six. Or no, he'd be at seven. Or he could have the green jacket. He would have took it the green jacket. And Rory famously said after one of those U.S. Opens, I would take 100 of those days after the heartbreak just to get my hands on another major championship. And not only did he get his hands on another major championship, he got his hands on the one that's beat him up the most. The one that is, that golf course has ruined him. And a golf course, if we did not know the memories and we just knew the layout and the game styles of these players, Augusta fits Rory to a T. But the mental demons, all the heartbreak he's had to win the Masters and complete the career Grand Slam is remarkable. And I, as a Rory fan, as someone who's watched pretty much all his tournaments for a while now, I was losing my mind. I was pacing. It was not a pretty scene. And I was trying to stay positive. I was like, stay positive. But it was tough for a while. And once you think he's got it in the bag, he gets through the horror hole that was 10. Okay, bogey at 11, that's fine. Gets through 12. How many times have we seen players hit the ball into the water at 12? I think of Molinari in 2019 with Tiger 1. How can you not think of Spieth making a 7 on 12? In 2016, allowing Danny Willett to win the green jacket. Think about that. He gets through 12, hits a great drive on 13, great layup, and then he hits it into the water on a chip. And then he bogeys 14. Just the resilience he showed. And it's going to do wonders for him. And Joey mentioned we got the PGA coming up at his favorite venue, Quail Hollow. Oakmont is a driver's paradise, driving the golf ball. Trust me, Rory will love Oakmont. And then, to cap off the year, at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland, where he is going to get an unreal welcome. And they were showing videos of his home golf course in Northern Ireland and pubs all over Ireland freaking out when the putt went in. The amount of Guinness consumed, I don't want to know, after Rory knocked in that putt in the playoff. He's going to get a hero's welcome at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. And if you look at those golf courses, he has the course record. Well, he had the course record at Portrush when he was like 16. Didn't he shoot like 61? They're talking about on the broadcast. And Quail Hollow at the PGA at a course he loves so much. And now he has to play free now. He's completed golf, in his opinion. Now it's just about how many majors can I get? I've won them all. The mental hurdle is over. I'm a major champion again. Now it's about stacking them. And I think he's going to win some. I love his chances at all three venues this year. And you'd like to think for the Masters for the next 3 years, if he's playing like this, now that the mental hurdle's over, he's going to be in contention. So I'm really looking forward to see what Rory does the next few months. I guess the PGA's in a few weeks and the next few years. Now that he finally has the Grand Slam, finally has a green jacket, and this cannot be overstated, finally has a major championship for the first time in 10 years. So that was my quick thoughts on the Masters. A shout out to Justin Rose, though. What a performance. What a performance. He was sensational. What a run he made on the weekend. But congratulations to Rory. Sorry we went crazy on the Masters, but it was that good of a Masters Sunday. You had the two big names, Rory going for history, DeChambeau being a huge star on the internet. Then you had the likes of Patrick Reed in the mix, Ludvig Åberg, Justin Rose. There was a Canadian in the mix and Corey Connors. There's players hovering around the leaderboards making runs. Ludvig, people are going to look, he shot 72, but he was four over on his last two holes. He hit a great iron into 16, and he was right there with Rory and Rose. Then he crumbled down the stretch. And if Patrick Reed makes a two on 17, it was just a phenomenal, phenomenal weekend. And there's nothing like the Masters back nine Sunday with some drama. There is nothing close. We're going to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Demidov making his first NHL appearance tonight, his debut, as the Canadians look to lock up that last playoff spot in the East. And the NBA playoffs, they're about to start. We have two matchups in the East known, and we have two matchups in the West known. And we got play-in games this week, so we will break that down coming up after the break. My name is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
The ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Blue. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Hi, and welcome to the show tonight. Tonight we have
the best new music.
But right now, let's check out the changes in this week's
CJLO
Top 30.
Charts and Crafts. Counting down the best new artists played at the station. Every Friday at noon, only on CJLO 6090 AM.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. Can't get over that Masters Sunday. That was phenomenal. But we still have to get into the National Hockey League. And the Montreal Canadiens, they had their chances this weekend to book a spot in the playoffs. Had a game on the road in Ottawa. And that one got away from them rather quickly. Ottawa got in the front foot, took that game. Then they played Toronto, where Dobesh kept them in that game. The Leafs were all over them, totally outplaying them. He kept Montreal in the game. It goes to overtime, 0-0, no score. And it's Mitch Marner in overtime getting it done for the Maple Leafs. And I want to get the exact shots. Montreal only had 15 shots Dobesh had to make 30. So it was 35 shots for the Leafs and 15 for the Canadiens. So they outshot them by 20, more than doubled their shots. And now they're in a spot where a point, I think, would do. But if they don't get it done tonight, my goodness. Like, you get the Blackhawks. Chicago, one of the worst teams I've ever seen. It's Bedard than nothing else. So it has to get done tonight. I think it will be done tonight. If you lose to Chicago, you don't deserve to go to the playoffs. Let's be honest. Chicago at home. And then if they don't get it done there, then there's going to be a ton of pressure on them on Wednesday against the Carolina Hurricanes. Ton of pressure. I don't know who Columbus has. Columbus has Philly and the Islanders. They can win those two games. So Montreal has to get it done. And they're getting their guy tonight. Demidov is in the lineup. The wait is over. No more tracking flights. No more following him to the airports. No. He is in town. He is in Montreal. He will play for the Montreal Canadiens tonight. Wearing, I think, 93. And trust me, people are going to go nuts. Now, the real question is, if they lose this game, and it's going, I cannot believe I'm saying this when they're playing the Blackhawks. If they lose this game and Columbus win tomorrow, what is going to happen on Wednesday? How are the Canadiens going to play? That's what I want to know. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but trust me, if tonight doesn't happen, they don't get it done tonight, and then they play a good team in Carolina, I'm very worried. Very worried. Because I think Columbus should get it done against Philly. And then they got the Islanders, who are just a mess. Patrick Waugh just I don't know. He's just burning down the Islanders. Just everything. Every post game, there's a headline from Patrick Waugh. It's crazy. This is a big, big game for Montreal. Columbus should win their two games. Montreal should win tonight, and it should be over. But if it doesn't, oh my goodness. You lose in regulation to Chicago, oh my goodness. And who knows? I don't know if it's Spencer Knight tonight. Maybe he could steal a game for Chicago. Maybe that's the one thing you're thinking of. I don't know. But, yeah, just Montreal, the last few games, I didn't think they played well Saturday at all. I didn't think they played Friday well at all. And I don't know what's going on, and I know it's the regular season, you have ups and downs and everything, but like a week and a bit ago, they were playing unreal hockey. They were for sure making the playoffs. And then we were having the conversation, oh, can they catch Ottawa? Who knows? Who knows? But now, this is a test. If you let this one slip, good God. And you know what? They weren't expected to be in the playoffs anyway. But still, they had a 96% chance, I believe, to make the playoffs after they beat Detroit. 96! And it comes down to tonight. I think they get it done tonight. I've watched the Blackhawks too much, unfortunately, just to watch Bedard. And they are a tough, tough watch. Tough watch. And maybe they play inspired because Pat Maroon's about to retire and Alec Martinez. Okay. But to me, they're one of the worst hockey teams I've ever seen. And poor Connor Bedard just stranded there. Donato's not bad. Teravainen, that's okay. Bertuzzi, he's on the ice every time another team scores. They're just an awful hockey team. And they have to turn it around, because if they don't, in the next 2 to 3 years, Bedard's going to want out of there, and rightfully so. Because I've watched the Blackhawks some nights, and he is doing fantastic things. Great saucer passes, great moves, and his teammates can't do anything. And it's easy to blame the teammates, but you see him. If you watch the Blackhawks, you would know. Like, this kid is disgusting, and the roster is atrocious. So the Blackhawks really need to turn things around and help this kid out. But that's going to be this offseason. Their season's done, but they could play spoiler in Montreal tonight. The Canadiens, the one thing I'm worried about is the secondary scoring a little bit. Dvorak's played, and it's funny enough, the old guys have been playing well. Dvorak's playing well. Gallagher's playing well. Anderson's playing much better. That's positive. The first line, I don't know where it went the last two nights. It needs to bounce back. Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky. New hook, he needs to do more. And I don't know where Demidov's going to be placed in the lineup. I'd assume it's going to be on a second line. Maybe you move line A down. I'm not sure. But I know you keep the first line together, and you keep that I guess that'd be the third line, because then you have the Armia, Jake Evans, and those guys on the fourth line. So that first and third lines have to stay intact, personally, for me. So you got to put Demidov on the left side or right side on the second line. So it's going to be interesting. They're going to have a tough decision coming up, Marty St. Louis, tonight. And I think they're going to get it done. Love Lane Hudson, what he's been doing, even during this little stretch. I think him and Gooley's a fantastic pairing. People are like, oh, Struble. Him and Struble play great together. Listen, Lane Hudson is a hell of a hockey player. He can play well with anyone. And Caden Gooley's a first-round pick. He was their number one defenseman of the future last year. They're like, Gooley's going to be the number one. Now Hudson's obviously taken that. But he's a first-pairing defenseman. Tommy, they're both left shots. Okay, when Reinbacher's ready to come up, maybe he'll be on the first pair. But as it stands right now, Gooley and Hudson is a good duo. It really is. So I expect Montreal to get the job tonight. I expect Toronto to lock up the Atlantic. They've pretty much done that. So that means we're going to get two phenomenal series with Atlantic teams. You're going to get Ottawa and Toronto, the Battle of Ontario, and the Florida matchup, the Battle of Florida between Tampa Bay and the Florida Panthers. So those are two phenomenal series, and Tampa's been red hot. Kucherov's leading the league in scoring again. It's going to be a great series. Two teams with Stanley Cup caliber coaches. Both coaches have won cups. Players have won cups. I'm interested to see Florida. They've been to the finals 2 years in a row. That's a lot of hockey. I assume Tkachuk will be back for the playoffs. And Marchand's slowly fitting in there in Florida. Seth Jones has been a bit of a disappointment. But let's see. Maybe he elevates his play come postseason time. He's a big body right shot defenseman. So that's going to be two awesome series. Nashville, Carolina is the one I care the least about. That doesn't really do anything for me. There's no Hughes in that series. Jack Hughes either has been out for a while. Great job for New Jersey to stick in the playoff picture, but I think it's just the Metropolitan being horrendous. And then Washington's going to play either Montreal or Columbus. So the East is... I like all those series except for Carolina and New Jersey just because that doesn't do anything for me. Washington-Columbus wouldn't do anything for me either. Columbus is a great story, of course, after the Johnny Gaudreau situation. That's a phenomenal story. Montreal, if it's Montreal-Washington, I'm crazy into that. I'm crazy into Toronto-Ottawa. And the Battle of Florida, I'm going to love every second of that. We go to the West, and the Winnipeg Jets have locked up the President's Trophy. And they're still waiting on who they're going to play. Because I wrote off Calgary a week ago or 2 weeks ago. They've taken, in their last five games, they've taken 8 out of 10 points, and they're right there. And St. Louis is 2 points up right on them with two games to go, and Minnesota's 3 points up, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. But if I am Winnipeg, I would much rather Calgary. They don't score as well. They grind out goals. They don't have elite snipers. Nazem Kadri's okay. It's not a great hockey team there. It's just a bunch of grinders. St. Louis is one of the hottest teams in the league. They won 12 in a row till last week. They fell a bit. They lost, what, 2 in a row? But still, they're red hot. Don't think anyone wants to play the Blues. And in Minnesota, they're going to get Kaprizov back. So I hope Calgary gets in. We'll see what happens. They got a tough schedule coming up for their last two games. But they're right there in the Western Conference. Then we're going to get Dallas and Colorado. That's going to be phenomenal. Everyone will be talking about Mikko Rantanen and that whole situation. Now that he's in Dallas, playing against his old team, the team that traded him away to Carolina, then he gets flipped to Dallas. It's nuts. Absolutely nuts. That's going to be phenomenal. Edmonton, LA for the 100th year in a row. Listen, just McDavid and Draisaitl playing playoff hockey, I'm into. And LA's been playing great hockey, and this might be the year LA gets them. Who knows? That series, fine. I'll be into it because Edmonton's in it. Then another series that I'm going to love, absolutely love, is whoever gets Vegas. So it's either Minnesota gets Vegas, St. Louis gets Vegas. I don't think maybe Calgary can get it. I'm not sure on the math. But I love watching the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm a huge Jack Eichel fan. I think he's phenomenal. Maybe it's the gold uniforms. I don't know. But they have star power all over the lineup. Mark Stone, Pietrangelo. To me, Vegas plays a very exciting brand of hockey. The crazy exciting brand of hockey. So I want that to happen. And another thing, if it's St. Louis and Vegas, it's the fired Bruins head coach bowl. The Bruins let Cassidy go. They let Montgomery go after having crazy success with the team. Now they've gone to two Western teams, and they're right there in the playoffs. So that'd be a crazy fun series as well. So my dream, I don't know if it's possible, will be Calgary, Winnipeg, and then Vegas and St. Louis. But I don't know if Calgary gets in. As great of a story as that'd be, I don't see Minnesota losing down the stretch or St. Louis. I hope I'm wrong. But I just don't see that happening. So that's what it looks like early in the NHL playoffs as we get, a week away? Week and a half away? So if Montreal just wins tonight, everything's sorted out in the Eastern Conference. All the matchups will be set, and away we go. If we go quickly over to the NBA, we finally have the play-in games. In the East, we're going to have Atlanta, Orlando, Miami, Chicago. In the West, Memphis, Golden State, Sacramento, and Dallas. Now, this is going to be very interesting. And personally, I'm a huge Celtics fan. I'll be following the Eastern Conference. To me, the West is far more exciting. It's not even close. So you have the Cavs and Boston, pretty much a locks to make the Eastern Finals. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm selling the Knicks short. Maybe I'm selling the Pacers short. Milwaukee have Giannis. Detroit's a great story. Maybe I'm selling all those teams short. But to me, Cleveland and Boston are by far the best teams in the Eastern Conference. So I see them going to the East Finals. The West, you have OKC. You have Houston. You have LeBron, Luka, and the Lakers. You have Jokic and the Nuggets after they just fired Michael Malone. The Clippers, James Harden's playing like old James Harden again. Kawhi Leonard's back playing healthy. They're going to be a scary team. Minnesota, Anthony Edwards. He's putting on a show. That should be fun. Then in the play-in, you have the Warriors with Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, and that bad man Steph Curry. And they lost a tough one last night to the Clippers. But they're going to be fun. And then there's the possibility of Dallas getting in after all of those terrible, terrible injuries and one of the worst trades in NBA history. They're still lurking. To me, the West, like, come on, look at these series. You could have Thunder Warriors in the first round, but probably they win that game against Memphis. But you could have Thunder and Dallas. Meh. Houston and the Warriors, that's fun. But to me, Nuggets, Clippers, oh yes, love that. T-Wolves, Lakers, Anthony Edwards against Luka, little bit of a rematch of the West Finals last year. I love that. And just look at the star power. Luka, LeBron, Steph, Jokic, SGA, James Harden playing an MVP level, Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Edwards, Steph, Jimmy Butler, Ja Morant, Anthony Davis. The West is loaded. And trust me, I'm a diehard Celtics fan. I'll be watching the Celtics series. And I know none of the games really come in conflict with one another, but I will be far more excited to watch the Western Conference games than the Eastern Conference games, aside from the Celtics. I'm sorry. That's the truth. I hate to say it, Like Knicks, Pistons, that would be fun. Detroit, New York, that should be a fun series. Indiana, Milwaukee, okay, that's a fun series. Was it going to be Boston and Chicago? Cleveland, Atlanta, none of those series. Like the Celtics one I'm excited for, but no, I'm not excited for any of those ones. The West, it's Kawhi and Harden against Jokic. God, I can't even talk. Anthony Edwards against LeBron, Luka, and I'll include Austin Reeves in there too. You have Steph in a play-in game. You have Anthony Davis in a play-in game. Will Oklahoma City finally get over the hump? What's the deal with the Houston Rockets? It's just so many good storylines, way better storylines in the Western Conference than in the East. I don't even think it's remotely close. I don't. So that tips off this week. Can't wait for that. We had Carlos Alcaraz winning in Monte Carlo, Masters 1000. Great tournament for him. He's fantastic on the red clay. So he gets a much-needed win. He was struggling for a bit. Got bounced in the semis at Indian Wells. Lost his first match in Miami. He was kind of in a tailspin there. And sure enough, he comes to back to the red clay at Monte Carlo, and he puts on a show. So good for him. Good for Carlos Alcaraz with a big win this weekend. When we come back, we're going to talk about some rumors I've heard in the National Football League. Could Shedeur Sanders fall to the Saints at 9? Apparently, that's a strong possibility. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We'll be back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Is on April 28th. Waking up for an early class? That's hard. Voting is easy. You can register and vote on campus from April 13th to 16th. And don't forget to bring accepted ID. Check elections.ca to find out where and when you can vote.
Tune in to the Anatomy of Creepy Music right here on CJLO 1690 AM every Saturday from noon until 2 p.m. where we examine the origins and the evolution of music from the Caribbean.
Back here, Tommy John Show. Some Blue Rodeo for you guys. Got to support the Canadian artists. So we have the NFL draft in just over, it's a week and a half away. And this draft is so weird. There's not a slam dunk number one pick. It's going to be Cam Ward, but he's not a slam dunk by any means to be a star. But then we've heard everything from everyone. We've heard Shedeur Sanders going 2 to the Browns, Shedeur going to the Giants, Shedeur falling to the Steelers at the end of the first round. We've heard everything. But the one thing that scares me, is him going to the wrong spot. Because I believe in Shedeur Sanders. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback. And the one thing people forget, his offensive line was atrocious at Colorado. And he still completed over 70% of his passes. And he throws a fantastic ball, beautiful ball. His mechanics are superb. And he's not scared of the limelight. His dad's Deion Sanders, primetime Deion Sanders. And his first Division I start in college was nationally televised against the national runner-ups in the TCU Horned Frogs. And he put on a show. So did Travis Hunter, but he put on a show. So I don't understand. Like, the team, when you're, okay, the Titans prefer Cam Ward. Fair enough. They're taking a quarterback. They need one. I respect that. If you're the Giants or the Browns, I don't understand not taking Shedeur Sanders. I don't. First of all, the Browns are in contract hell because of that awful, awful acquisition of Deshaun Watson and giving him that ridiculous contract. Ridiculous. Which has totally backfired. Now they have Kenny Pickett as the quarterback on the roster. Now maybe they love a Jackson Dart who could fall to the second round. Who knows? Maybe they love the kid from Louisville. Is it Tanner Shaq, Tyler Shaq, whatever his name is. Keep getting his name wrong. Maybe they like him. I don't know. But to me, there is a substantial gap between Shedeur Sanders and those guys. There is. And Kevin Stefanski learned under Pat Shurmur. Pat Shurmur, the OC at Colorado. To me, the Browns should take him. You could love Travis Hunter all you want. You can pair Abdul Carter with Myles Garrett. But the Browns are not in a situation to do this. They aren't. You need a cheap quarterback better than Kenny Pickett. Because that roster's still good. I would take Shedeur Sanders. I would. And they probably won't. So that takes us to three, the New York Giants. And let's be honest, for the 100th time, we're going to say it here on this program. Joe Shane, the GM, Brian Daboll, the head coach, they're on their last season. Let's be honest. If they do not make a playoff run or a competitive, they're out. And right now, the quarterbacks in their room are a washed-up Russell Wilson on a one-year deal, Jameis Winston, and Tommy DeVito. But I can't even talk. I needed that pause. You're going to put your job on the line, Daboll and Shane. Your job's on the line. And you're putting it in the hands of a washed up Russell Wilson or a Jameis Winston, Tommy DeVito. What are we doing? I don't understand it. You're not in a position to take an Abdul Carter. You're not in a position to take a Travis Hunter if he falls. You're not in a position to do that. You can't. Now, maybe there was a secret meeting behind closed doors between Mara and Shane and Daboll where they said, hey, give us another year. We prefer the quarterbacks next year. I don't know. But to my knowledge, that has not happened. And with the whole Saquon Barkley disaster last year where Shane didn't want to re-sign him and he goes on and has the greatest running back season of all time, over 2,000 yards, win a Super Bowl with the rival Eagles, and it was on Hard Knocks, that just killed Joe Shane's credibility. And he's still around. And they need a quarterback, and the fact that they won't take Shedeur Sanders to me is crazy. He throws a great ball. He's accurate. He won't be scared of the limelight. What are we doing? You're not in a position to take Abdul Carter. You're not in a position to take Travis Hunter. You aren't. But as we stand here, a week and a half out from the draft, all indicators are that Shedeur can fall to 9 to the Saints. And if he doesn't get picked there, look out at 21 for the Steelers. And to me, getting Shedeur Sanders at 21, even at 9 in this draft, not the draft of last year. There's no Drake May, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix. In this draft is crazy to me. Crazy. So I like him going to New Orleans. I think Kellen Moore, that's a good fit. I just saw a few mocks doing that. He wants a quarterback. Derek Carr's injury, his future is unknown because of injuries. And Shedeur Sanders is sitting right there. I think Kellen Moore can do great things with him. I like that fit. But I would be, I could not get my head around the idea of both the Browns and the Giants passing on Shedeur. It makes no sense to me. Thank you guys for listening. We're back next Monday where we will talk about the NHL playoffs and the NBA postseason and the NFL draft. I'm Tommy Lane. Thank you all for listening.
You're listening to